The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
We're told that the U.S. military has actually burned through more of its stockpile of key munitions than we previously thought. And it's prompting senior military commanders to issue warnings that those levels, those inventory levels, are now dangerously low. That was a quote from one of the sources to me, Jim Sciutto and Haley Britsky. And look, specifically, we're told that 80% of the U.S. stockpile of interceptors for a key air defense system known as THAAD, that those have been used up during the Iran war so far, just in 5 months of this conflict. I mean, that's a staggering number. That's higher than the percentage that we had believed was true just weeks ago, where it was more around 60%. But that is an important system because it's the primary means, along with Patriot missiles, that the U.S. is able to counter and take down ballistic missiles. And it's not just used by the U.S. military. It's also used by some of its key allies, including some in the Middle East, namely Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates.
Not only are they very expensive, but they are also long timelines to replenish. So you're not talking weeks, you're not talking months, you're talking years to rebuild these inventories.
Welcome back. President Trump says a deal to reopen the Strait of Hormuz could come as early as today. He tells Tehran it has one last chance to reach a deal, while Iran has reportedly denied direct negotiations with Washington. The Iranian propaganda media have been saying that all week. Tehran and Oman are said to be in talks on a framework to reopen the vital shipping route, however, with questions over security arrangements and whether Tehran could still collect fees from ships passing through its side of the strait. President Trump spoke on the negotiations and where things stand today, yesterday. Watch.
Could happen tomorrow or the next day. Tomorrow, there, a lot of progress has been made.
What?
And they called me and they said, please, let's talk. They want to talk. But the funny thing is, they never mention that. They always say, we're not talking. But they called. They want to talk. We've been talking. They want to make a deal. They do not want to be hit. It was the biggest hit since World War II, as I said. They did not, and they saw it happening. They saw all the goods being loaded. They saw everything. They knew exactly what was happening. And I think it'd be very smart to make a deal. We'll see what happens. They had a very good day. The negotiations were good.
Estimates show the U.S. has used more than half of its stockpile for some weapon systems in the conflict with Iran. The conflict in Iran is putting pressure on U.S. weapons stockpiles. Almost a third of Tomahawk missiles have been used. Nearly two-thirds of Patriot interceptors have been depleted. And just more than half of precision strike missiles remain.
We have plenty. We have a lot of ammunition, different types, more than we could ever use, no matter what. But we have a lot. I'd like to have more. To be honest,
the Center for Strategic and International Studies says the U.S. has enough missiles to continue fighting in Iran under any plausible scenario. But Pentagon officials are also concerned about tomorrow's wars.
We can go on against Iran for quite a long time. The risk is about a future conflict in the Western Pacific.
If you look at Reuters, the numbers are even worse than what Fox News is reporting there. But even Fox now is saying, yeah, the supplies are diminished. And if you think of it, the arguing back and forth, Pete Hegseth saying these are bogus reports, but any stockpile of weapons or anything in war, it's finite. It's, of course, if you use those weapons over the course of a six-month war, you're going to deplete your stockpile. That's just kind of an obvious point to make. And so on the one hand, as you heard, President Trump says, we've got plenty. I'd like to have more. Well, how many more or how much more do we need? This is bringing a lot of scriptures to mind, as we'll get to here in just a moment. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. Lots and lots to get to. We've got quite a lot of material on Iran, the latest not just on the stockpile of weapons, but also just the report that, as the New York Times says, an emerging deal could cement Iran's control of the Strait of Hormuz. Imagine going through this war, one where we've been told Iranian forces have been obliterated. And imagine Iran coming out of this in a stronger position, gaining control of Hormuz, and then to start charging all the fees for the ships passing through. Who could have imagined this back in February? The New York Times says Iran and Oman are closing in on an agreement to reopen shipping traffic in the Strait of Hormuz, according to Iranian and American officials. But if the accord goes into effect, it could come at a high price, ratifying Tehran's control over what, before the war, was an open international waterway. It was wide open. Now Iran could come out of this and have some control. If not total control, partial control. That's pretty amazing. Now, that's the New York Times. And again, we don't always know who to believe. Which statistics are accurate, Reuters or Fox News? Well, when you look into the scriptures, that's our guide on this program, the sure word of Bible prophecy. And you think about Leviticus 26 and verse 19. Mr. Armstrong covers this in depth in the United States and Britain in prophecy. But it says in that verse, I will break the pride of your power, and I will make your heaven as iron and your earth as brass. There's curses that are setting in because of sin, because of transgression. That's what opens the way for the devil to start working his designs, his agenda. The Bible says Satan's the god of this world. He's bombarding this world with all kinds of division and strife, wars, rumors of wars, violence, division politically. There's news of President Trump just barely escaping yet another assassination attempt. This at his golf course out in California, where he was just a few days ago, I think. In any event, they caught a shooter that was scoping the place. How much more of this can the country withstand? God has a job for President Trump to do. We've talked about this before. But what does it say about our nation, about the sickness that's setting in? God has broken the pride of our power. And so you see, as the next verse says, you see a lot of our strength, our military strength, that's being spent in vain. It's being used in vain. What do we have to show for it? We can talk about Tomahawk missiles and all of those things, but what do we have to show for that strength? It is strength. It's been a push-button war, and when it's a push-button war and you're not going to put boots on the ground, well, you're going to rely on missiles. You're going to rely on an aerial bombardment. But that's not bringing Iran to its knees. It's not. They're rebuilding just as fast as we're destroying their arsenal. And there have been other reports on that as well. With a lot of help, as I said yesterday, from China and Russia. Deuteronomy 28 and verse 25, it says, "The Lord shall cause you to be smitten before your enemies. You shall go out one way against them and flee seven ways before them, and shall be removed into all the kingdoms of the earth." God, it says, shall cause you to be smitten. Now, this is the pivotal prophecy that Mr. Armstrong talked about in United States and Britain in prophecy, Leviticus 26 primarily, but Deuteronomy 28 is the companion passage where God says, if you obey, if you do these things that I tell you to do, then you'll be blessed. If you disobey, if you rebel, if you forsake God, then you're going to be cursed. Blessings and cursings. That is a prominent theme right through the Bible. It applies to us in the spiritual sense too. True Christians, if we obey, we'll be blessed. If we disobey, we'll be cursed. And when disobedience brings on the cursings, well, we have to blame ourselves. We can't blame God. We're violating the laws, the teachings, the principles of God's way of life. Cause and effect. It's a law. Verse 20 says, your strength shall be spent in vain. That's what we're seeing. We're putting our trust in our strength, and what is it yielding? What are the results? What is the fruit? Psalm 33, notice verse 16, it says, there is no king saved by the multitude of an host or an army. A mighty man is not delivered by much strength. If you're going to put your trust in your own strength, what does Jeremiah 17:5 say? If you put your trust in a man or human strength, then you're going to come under a curse. The Zechariah 4 and verse 6, talking about Herbert Armstrong and that whole passage, the day of small things and so on, it says that Mr. Armstrong built, not by human might or strength, but by God's power. His ministry, his work, is proof of God's mighty power. And when the Bible talks about, you know, building for God, Psalm 127 and verse 1, unless the Lord builds the house, that applies to everything in life. Unless God is at the center of it, it's all in vain. And so Leviticus 26 says your strength is going to be spent in vain because you're relying on your strength and not God's strength. You're not looking to God for deliverance. We're not putting our faith in God. You could backtrack to the start of the so-called war against terrorism following the deadly attacks on 9/11. 25 years ago, we're coming up to that anniversary, yet another anniversary, another momentous one. And we said right at the outset, when the United States unleashed its missiles, of course, that was back when we were putting boots on the ground. It's not going to happen in Iran, no way. But we were firing a lot of missiles into Afghanistan and later Iraq. And what did we write at the time? This was in the Trumpet, November 2001. Does America have the will to see it through? What happens when the war spreads from Afghanistan to other less isolated governments? It was an easy target, as I've said previously. They didn't have the strong allies with Russia and China. And even within Afghanistan, it was all of these rogue fighters, the Taliban, scattered over the country. They were elusive, and it did require a lot of firepower to seek them out, to take them out. But what happens, like we said in 2001, what happens when the war spreads to other more powerful nations, backed by Russia, backed by China? It says here, when world opinion begins to turn on the U.S., what happens then? Well, in the case of Iran today, U.S. opinion's turning on the U.S. It's a very unpopular war. And you've got the Republican faction, Tucker Carlson, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Thomas Massie, all of those individuals, they were photoed together or pictured together recently. And they're very much against the war and against Trump now. It says here, what happens if world opinion changes? What happens if American soldiers begin to die? Or if retaliatory terrorist attacks on American soil intensify? Would the unanimity of public opinion fracture? Would fear intensify and determination falter? That was 25 years ago we wrote that. And now look at the last 6 months. We started with all kinds of firepower, push-button war, expecting unconditional surrender, bragging about our victory, bragging about just decimating the Iranian Navy. And here we are. Here we are 6 months later, and the U.S. is running out of munitions. Listen to clip two from Fox News.
The Pentagon's budget request for fiscal year 2027 includes $5.8 billion for Tomahawk missiles, up 513% from fiscal year 2026. The request for precision strike missiles is 245% higher. Terminal High Altitude Area Defense, or THAADs, up 650%, and Patriot Missile Segment Enhancements, up 927%.
The numbers don't lie.
927%. Why would the budget for that be increased so astronomically?
Because we're running out, that's why. And as you heard in the cold open, this is not something you can replace in a week or two, or even many months. We're talking about years of production. This is exactly what God said would happen. Our strength would be spent. We're spending it. We're spending it in Iran. Even as we negotiate. In fact, in the last six months, we've spent more time negotiating than we have been spending our strength. And both, see, both are signs of our weakness, our sickness. The strength is being spent in vain, and we're desperate to negotiate an end to this quagmire. That's what it is. As I said earlier, Reuters, the numbers that Reuters is crunching, it's even worse than what Fox News reports. Says here, the U.S. Army has used up much of its global stockpile of highly accurate long-range missiles during its five-month war with Iran, according to three people familiar with the data, raising concerns about the military's readiness for future conflicts. If you think about Germany, we're carrying out this war effort. And at the same time, talking about our economy and the golden age as if we're living in a peaceful era. Germany, on the other hand, is saying, look, we need a war-era economy because there are wars and we've got to prepare for war. And so they're making changes, dramatic changes, in how they set aside budgets for the military, the German war machine. And the United States, meanwhile, is spending its strength in vain. It says here, the missiles are principally the Army's surface-to-surface weapons. This is what we're in desperate need of because this is all we're willing to do, the surface-to-surface weapons. Just fire it from a long distance away. That way there's nobody on the U.S. side that's going to die from the operation. And then, of course, we can't have boots on the ground. The long-range munitions, well, let me just back up. The U.S. has used virtually all of these weapons, according to two of the sources. Pete Hegseth disagrees, but as I say, stockpiles of weapons, they're finite, aren't they? Of course they are. If you have 1 million of these missiles and you have a five-month war, I'm just throwing numbers out there. I don't know what the numbers are, but if you fire, you know, 500,000, then your stockpile's down 500,000. That's just basic math. Reuters says here, the long-range munitions, which cost more than $1 million each, are an important part of the military's arsenal. You just saw those statistics. Yeah, this budget needs to go up 500%. This one over here, 900%. Now, just think about those numbers in terms of the federal debt. $40 trillion, up from $5.4 trillion in 1998, less than 30 years ago. I covered that with you yesterday. How does this end? How will this end for the United States when we're burying ourselves under this massive amount of debt and we're seeking funding for a massive amount of munitions? And we're spending all of this strength to accomplish what? The handwriting is on the wall. God brought President Trump back, as we've said so often. My father covers it in AUA, America Under Attack, to give us one last chance to repent, to turn from our wicked ways. says here, the U.S. also burned through a little less than half of its global supply of Tomahawk cruise missiles, which are generally launched from ships, since the start of the war, one source said. The dramatic rundown in precision long-range missiles means U.S. President Donald Trump may have to rely more on riskier piloted bombing missions. It's not even, we just think about the losing the pride in our power. It's not even just that we refuse to put boots on the ground. We won't even send planes in to bombs away. They've got to be fired, these long-range missiles, they've got to be fired from hundreds of miles away from ships in most cases. That's pretty amazing to just think about the weakness. I've praised President Trump for at least doing something, for at least going after the head of the snake. But, you know, the Bible, my father has written that Iran is the head of the snake. It's not just, you know, one Ayatollah. You can take out one leader and then brag about it and say, yeah, we've totally decimated the regime, and now the new guys coming in, they're just a bunch of moderates. Iran is the head of the snake. Iran is the king of the South. And that king is gaining strength. Incredibly, it's gaining strength. There's a passage in Luke 14, which we go through with anyone counseling for baptism, about counting the cost. Did the Trump administration really count the cost? The cost of what it would take to take out the king of the South? We know from the Bible what it takes. Daniel 11:40, read it. I'll get to that a little bit later. But just a few observations or points or maybe lessons that we can take away from America not counting the cost in this war effort. For one, as I touched on already, the Trump administration has spent more days negotiating with Iran than it has fighting against Iran. What does that say about this war effort? Has there been any other war like this one? Is that the way Putin is carrying out his effort in Ukraine? Is he, you know, pulling back and then say, hey, let's get to the negotiating? No, they're just in a war. And they're trying to bring the other side into complete and total surrender. Ukraine's fighting for its life. Is that just hitting the pause button every other week? Now, you know, Russia and Ukraine, they're not at war. They're negotiating. They're making a deal. Everybody wants a deal. Is that the way Putin thinks? Absolutely not. He's all in. How unusual is this war that we're witnessing? Usually the negotiations happen at the end when someone's defeated, when someone's pleading for mercy. It's painful to watch President Trump talk about, oh yeah, they're desperate. They want negotiations. They called me up. They really want to seek a peace agreement. And then the next day in the papers, you see Iranian officials saying, no, we're dealing with Oman. We're not talking to Trump. We're not negotiating with America. They're the great Satan. What is wrong with this picture? This is U.S. weakness on display. And it proves who we are in prophecy. It proves that we're coming under curses. It proves the accuracy of Leviticus 26, verses 19 and 20. It absolutely does. Human nature has to be compelled to surrender, even if you look at converted life or being converted to the truth. A converted Christian, God has to bring us to the point of surrender. He brings us to the point of surrender, and then we go forward with, a peace agreement, you could say, as God fills our hearts with His Spirit of love and joy and peace. But if we don't surrender, if it doesn't begin with the surrender, well, it's just going to be back and forth arguing and bickering with God. And that's, you know, that's the way it is for most Christians in the world today. They like to be considered religious. They consider themselves to be Christian, but they pick and choose what they want to believe from the Bible or what they want to follow or what they'll accept. There's not an unconditional surrender before God. With Herbert Armstrong, there was. And that's why God was able to work mightily through that man for 50 plus years, because he surrendered to God and God's will. And he started obeying the teachings of the Bible faithfully. And he started walking by faith, looking to God, looking to Christ. And he let God build through him. God built the house. Another lesson from this war with Iran these past 5-6 months, you can't win a war with missile power alone. Again, just think of the coverage. You saw it in the cold open. The big story at the moment is that we're running out of missiles. This is a crisis. This is how America fights its wars now. We need missiles. We need long-range missiles so that we can fire at the enemy hundreds of miles away. And that's how we'll win wars, is it? Well, look at this war. Are we winning? Of course, Trump's people would say so, but are we? Here they're in negotiations right now to give Iran at least partial control of Hormuz. That's one of our news gatherers talked about, you know, the bombing campaign on Germany in World War II. And it was devastating, no doubt about it. But would that have brought Germany to complete and total surrender? No, it actually took the D-Day landings, landing at Normandy, and all these boots on the ground. Just, yes, it liberated France, but they were pushing all the way through to Germany, and Russia was coming from the other side. If you don't want boots on the ground, I guess if you use Japan as an example, it would have taken a nuclear bomb on Berlin. Perhaps it took two for Japan to surrender. But those are nuclear weapons. You know those aren't going to be used, not by the United States. They'll be used. The world will use them eventually when we come to great tribulation. But you can't win wars with missiles alone. Even World War II teaches us this. You look at the sacrifice, the willingness, the courage under fire for those Allied troops to land on those beaches, and so many of the soldiers were slaughtered before they even got up to the beach. That's what it took to bring Germany to the point of unconditional surrender. If you don't use troops, then you're eventually going to run out of missiles because the number, as I say, is finite. The number is at such and such level, and you keep firing and firing and firing and firing, you're going to run out eventually. And the production lines don't just rev up instantly and produce another million or so in a week. If you're not going to put troops on the ground, if you're not going to do flyovers for your bombing campaigns, then you are very limited in what you're able to do. It's just common sense, right? It should be. Germany, by the way, is watching and learning. The world is watching and learning. They're seeing what it takes to hold on, to resist against mighty Manasseh, the United States of America. And of course, Germany's also observing and taking note of what it takes to finally bring Iran, the King of the South, to the point of unconditional surrender. It takes a whirlwind, as Daniel 11:40 says. It takes an overwhelming show of force, not just push button, or if it is, some much bigger bombs, and going straight after cities not just this. You know, that's another thing about the missile strikes. They're coming a long ways away, these long-range missiles from ships and whatever Gulf, and then they're just very strategically pointed at missile factories or the nuclear program or the Iranian leadership. It's not like I'm itching for cities to be blown up. I'm just saying, if you're going to be that strategic or that precise in your bombing campaigns, you're dealing with the head of the snake, the king of the South. You can't just pinpoint these targets and say, we've obliterated them. We've taken them out. They've unconditionally surrendered. As I say, Germany is observing. Germany is learning. They're seeing how the U.S. is carrying out this war. They're seeing how ineffective it is in many ways. And they're also seeing what they need, the arsenal that they're going to need. And technology is changing so fast and so dramatically that it's not like they're going to need just millions and millions and millions of this, this, and this to fight the war from afar. If you've got the missiles, if you've got the boots on the ground, if you've got the flyover campaigns, you can see how a whirlwind would just take out the king of the South. Some blitzkrieg warfare. That's what's coming. That's what will eventually eliminate this menace. Bible prophecy says so. Look at how the reputation, the national prestige of the United States, and even the Trump administration, look at how much it's been tarnished these past few months. You see all the memes on social media. Trump, for the 9th time, says, this is your last chance. There was one the other day with the help of artificial intelligence where President Trump was saying, you know, I've hit the pause button on the pause effort, and I don't know how I could be more clear than that. We've paused the pause, and we'll resume when we have to. It was just comical. 5 months of pauses, of negotiations, missile strikes, and then a depleted stockpile of the one weapon, those missiles, the one weapon that you desperately need to fight this war from afar. The world is watching. I mentioned Germany watching Iran, seeing what it takes to take out the king of the South. But the world is watching America, and they see what it takes, even with a president that has shown some strength, that came in not so much to appease and to make a deal, a nuclear deal with Iran like Obama did, but to actually do something about the number one state sponsor of terrorism. But even that action, that spending of strength, it's not accomplishing what America thought going in. Another lesson or takeaway from this is you see the cost, the tremendous cost of being friends with all of these Gentile nations. Reaching out, you see it in the Middle East as well. I mentioned the other day, calling up Saudi Arabia, calling up UAE, calling up Qatar. You want me to go through with this campaign? The worst since World War II. The largest military operation since World War II. You want me to carry it out? No, Mr. President, no, we'd rather you not do that. Give peace a chance. Oh, okay. Again, how unusual is this war compared to previous wars where it was one side going against another side and fighting it out until one side quits and surrenders, is defeated? That's not, certainly not, what is happening here. This is from Fox News on the Iran deal from a few days ago, clip 7.
You know, if Iran thought that they were going to be able to play a bunch of games because we have midterms coming up, and it does complicate things without a doubt. The war is not a popular war, and it is definitely a drag on Republicans. It's a drag on the administration. to have this going on. But if they thought that they were going to bully President Trump because of the midterms, they don't understand Donald Trump. Donald Trump is not, he's not doing this for political reasons.
Well, that's Fox News. They're going to be cheerleading for President Trump. But President Trump is thinking about the politics of this. You can be sure of that. He talks about the midterms constantly. He knows how important it is. He knows how that this war is deeply unpopular. He wants it to get solved sooner rather than later. He wants a deal. That's why he wants a deal. That's why he's always talking about a deal. But Iran's looking at him talking endlessly about a deal and thinking, we just have to wait him out. And we'll end up with control of Hormuz. We'll end up with our leadership intact and so on and so forth. By the way, the cheerleading for President Trump, I was thinking of this morning when I watched that clip. There was a time when Fox News, they certainly weren't cheerleaders. After the dear leader stole the election in 2020, Fox News, they abandoned the Trump ship immediately. We've got to move on. And then the fake insurrection came in January of 2021, and Trump was silenced, and Fox News just ignored him. Fox News wouldn't go to his rallies anymore. You had to go on social media just to find a feed to watch one of his speeches. But now they're back. Oh, yes. Now they're fully supportive. What does this tell you about any of these platforms? You know, they put their finger to the wind. They see which way the political winds are blowing. It's all politics. Fox News was intimidated into silence on Trump because of the radical left, because of the dear leader, because of Obama. A lot of people were intimidated into silence following the election steal. Even on that subject, there's still a lot of silence at Fox News. Now, in other areas, you know, Fauci's been exposed and all the lies about COVID and so on. A lot of conservative outlets are changing their tune. Finally, I mentioned the other day, even ESPN commentators, sports journalists are about as liberal and far left as you can get. And even they're mocking Fauci. They're starting interviews, pleading the fifth, and then everyone has a good laugh. Well, where was that 6 years ago? Where was the cheerleading 6 years ago, Fox? I digress. Fox News, speaking of Fox, at Camp David, President Trump signaled that Washington is entering a more dangerous phase of its confrontation with Iran. The objective is seemingly no longer limited to dismantling Iran's nuclear infrastructure. It's now to weaken the Islamic Republic's ability to govern, sustain itself, and ultimately survive. So you're just all over the map on this subject. Dismantle, take out the leadership. No, actually, negotiation. They called me up. They desperately want a deal. We're about to unleash a World War II style bombing campaign. Nope, now it's off. Now we've called it off. There's hope for peace. And, oh, by the way, we're running out of missiles. So many different angles to this story. Listen to this from Deutsche Welle, clip 8.
We are not currently holding negotiations with the United States. Our talks are with Oman. They're focused on reaching an understanding on a route that would allow shipping to safely pass through the Strait of Hormuz.
Says the guy that's on the side that's bombing ships, cargo ships. Yeah, we're negotiating with Oman. We're going to make sure that they have safe passage for a small fee. If Iran comes through this with control of any or all parts of that Strait of Hormuz, what a defeat that would represent for the United States. We've talked in recent programs about the story saying they're rebuilding fast, thanks to Russia and thanks to China. And furthermore, there's more sophisticated
you know, technology and productions in some of those proxy areas with the Houthis and with Hamas and with Hezbollah. Not everything has to be done in Tehran and then shipped out for the proxies. Foreign Affairs touches on this reality. It says the resilience of both the Islamic Republic and its partners, despite years of apparent setbacks, points to an underlying flaw in the thinking that led to the conflict. Here again, there were mistakes made. And, you know, I know the Trump administration is not going to admit that. That's just human nature. Just keep going forward. Keep talking like you're winning and everything's successful and you've got the upper hand and you've got plenty of missiles and the economy's better than ever. We're in the golden age. We're prospering. Everybody's happy. We're unified. By targeting the Islamic Republic's economy, its leadership, weapons facilities, and central supply lines with military force and economic sanctions, Washington could fatally undermine the Iranian regime. In doing so, it would also deal a decisive blow to the regime's allies. That's been the thinking, right? Just you take out the head of the snake, and then all the other dangerous pockets around the world, they'll just evaporate, I guess. Well, there's a lot to be said for taking out the head. But as I say, the head is Iran. It's not just one guy in Iran. It's Iran. It's a regime. It's a religious, a religiously fanatical regime. And of course, a lot of the Iranian people are opposed to it, but there's a lot in Iran, a lot of people that love the regime, that love the power, that love going after the great Satan or the little Satan, that love killing Jews. It says, sever the head of the octopus in Tehran, the theory went, and the Axis groups, the octopus's many arms, would shrivel and die too. Well, as Foreign Affairs brings out, that hasn't happened. The Axis is no longer organized as a simple system with easily identifiable points of failure. Today, it more closely resembles a densely interconnected, self-reproducing web in which knowledge, resources, and even decision-making can be pooled in many different places at the same time. It just kind of makes you think what a missed opportunity it was during the George W. Bush administration. Because in November of 2001, America was prepared to put boots on the ground, and we did in Afghanistan and then later in Iraq. But think about what could have happened, what could have been done, if you take that same attitude or mindset or approach into Iran, the head of the snake, and you actually have boots on the ground, they're coming up to Tehran, and you've got the support of the missiles from overhead and the bombing campaigns from the jets and so on. Here we are 25 years later, and at least there's some fight in the Trump people. But it's very, very limited. It's very limited. And it's focused in on military sites, basically, those missiles, what they're blowing up and so on. Not that there aren't any casualties among civilians. But as with Israel, little Israel in the Middle East, the way Israel and the way the United States fight wars, it's according to a whole different set of rules than what, you know, China or Russia abide by. There are no rules when it comes to those Gentile nations. And so we can cozy up to them if we like. But that's not exactly working in our favor. It says, today it more closely resembles a densely, well, I read that. It says, when a leader is killed, a manufacturing site or warehouse is bombed, or a supply line is cut off, the various groups that are involved adapt, quickly replacing the slain leader, filling in technical knowledge gaps needed to build weapons, and reconstituting supply lines via alternative routes. It's very sophisticated now. It's a shadowy network. You can't just take it out with a Tomahawk missile.
It is this increasingly sophisticated and flexible structure that has allowed Iran's allies to adapt in the years since Hamas's October 7 attacks. That was almost 3 years ago. And it's getting worse. It's getting more sophisticated. It's making use of technology. It's using drones. It says, whereas military and technological know-how were once concentrated within the IRGC, they have since become embedded across a much more diffuse, interconnected ecosystem. So now the proxy groups, as I say, they can build their own weapons. They're not just 100% reliant on their masters in Tehran. It says, today, Hamas, Hezbollah, and the Houthis can all build and field their own one-way attack drones, firing them at targets up to 1,600 miles away. And this is why there's so many problems with Hormuz, because all it takes is a drone. The technology's changing that fast. It says, by carefully honing their organizational capabilities, the IRGC has transformed these groups from cell-based insurgents into highly capable organizations. They're keeping pace with the technology. They're exploiting the technology. And look, when you think about our recent issue of the Trumpet magazine, all in on the AI gamble, and one of the articles in here is about, you know, what happens if Gentile nations exploit certain technologies with AI ahead of America or faster than America? That puts them at an advantage, right? Again, this is just common sense. And here America's strength is spent in vain, and I suppose the discussion in the coming months is going to be about missiles. We gotta build missiles. We need more Tomahawks. We fight wars from afar. We fight push button wars, so we need the missiles. Not that America won't take or use AI, but when you look at the prophecies in Ezekiel and elsewhere, there's coming a time when the call to battle comes and we don't respond. There's a complete and total breakdown, probably in the technology, because of a cyber attack, because of the use of artificial intelligence coming from our enemies. Look at what Iran and all those Iranian proxies can do just because of, in this case, drones, drone technology. It says here the IRGC has also subcontracted training to Axis groups. It says through this process, the groups have built direct connections to one another and to other powerful state and non-state actors. Keep in mind, as I say, that yes, my father has talked about Iran being the head of the snake, but that's not one individual. It's not like the Prince of Rosh with respect to Russia and Putin. It just says that Iran, that's what it says in our King of the South booklet, Iran is the King of the South. I mentioned the New York Times piece earlier about an emerging deal could cement Iran's control of the Strait of Hormuz. It says here Iranian officials say that while there will be no tolls charged, the agreement includes a service fee to cover the environmental impact of the shipping, security for the cargo ships and tankers and staffing. Revenues would be divided equally between Iran and Oman, two Iranian officials said. Iran's really concerned about the environmental impact. So they're going to have to charge some service fees. No tolls. No. Just a fee. A service fee. We're just kind of recouping our losses, allowing these ships to come through our waterway, our sea gate. It's an amazing last 5-6 months. It's an amazing last 5 or 6 months, that's for sure. America's strategy, we didn't count the cost going in. You look at the strategy as it plays out, and it's just revealing more and more and more about America's weakness. We've lost the pride in our power. We're out there spending a lot of strength. The only strategy that will work when it comes to taking out the King of the South
is the whirlwind strategy described in Daniel 11:40. Surround the nation, surround Iran, annihilate the proxies as well. The Houthis, Hezbollah, Hamas. And the crazy thing is that that was well on its way to happening because of the rising lion in little Israel. But President Trump and his people stopped it. They won't go in for complete and total and unconditional surrender on the part of Hamas or Hezbollah. And it's the same strategy, the same approach with Iran. If you are serious about total victory, 100%, then you'd put boots on the ground. You'd use every single weapon at your disposal, including the Air Force, the bombing campaigns, the missiles, the boots on the ground, as you surround the nation and bring them to heel, to surrender, unconditional surrender. But going back to those verses I read from Psalms and Deuteronomy earlier, the bigger problem here is that we're not surrendering to God ourselves. We're not overwhelming our spiritual enemy and putting 100% trust in our great Creator God. You think about the strategy for war as it's described there in Daniel 11 and verse 40. What we need is to come against our sins, our weaknesses, our faults, our character flaws with a whirlwind of activity, with a whirlwind of firepower. My father in the Overcomer booklet talks about laying siege to our problems, our weaknesses. And in a paragraph, a very memorable one in that booklet, it talks about laying siege to what? What is it? Laziness, maybe? Complacency? The sin of addiction of some kind? Or the sin of idolatry? Disobedience to God's commandments? Refusal to keep the Sabbath? Lay siege to it. Bombard the enemy with force, with overwhelming force. Bring it to the point of unconditional surrender. That's a point my father makes in that book. How to be an overcomer. How to fight against sin. How to conquer our adversary. He's talked about in the Bible as going about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Satan wants to devour us. Satan is the number one state sponsor of spiritual terrorism. And he's coming after us. We have a target on our back. And we've got to be vigilant in our fight against him. We've got to go on the offensive with not just one, component of the war effort, but everything that we have at our disposal. And of course, looking to God above all, letting him build this strategy, this war effort. Really, we're concentrating on the wrong enemy, aren't we? Iran's not the enemy. The enemy in many ways is ourselves. The enemy is the fact that we're not close to God. We're not looking to God for deliverance, for the victory. We have to go to God for victories. Well, that's all that we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show, and we'll see you again tomorrow.